Thank you. So in this workshop we are mostly worrying about problems like disks and jets, where we have a lot of data, but the input physics is very uncertain. So I would say we know the outcome, we do not know the input. So for contrast, I'd like to speak about a subject where we know the input physics, but we are uncertain of the outcome. And as I learned at the coffee break, actually, the systems themselves may not exist, black hole, neutron star, binaries. So it's an abstract talk, I suppose. Obviously,
they don't think that they will be discovered by LIGO and Virgo.
Right. Speaking of LIGO and Virgo, right. Obviously, neutron star binaries, and black hole neutron star binaries are candidates for that. And the main input physics is gravity, obviously, and we know that if you have a closed binary, due to emission of gravitational radiation, it will tighten its orbit and the frequency will go up, and this is what LIGO and Virgo are hoping to discover. And I talked to some people, obviously, not everyone is of that opinion, but I asked some people who are doing these very accurate general relativistic calculations whether they are worried about the final merger, the coalescence, where you have hydrodynamic effects, which obviously you cannot take into account. And when you consider a star in hydrostatic equilibrium, and the standard answer is that the greatest sensitivity of the instruments is, say, at about 100 hertz, at any rate, at some range of frequencies, and the system moves through that range of frequency, and you don't care what happens afterwards because you never see it again. All right, so in other words, in a schematic form, if you plot the gravitational waveform as a function of time, okay, the amplitude grows and the frequency increases or the period decreases. The only problem with that is that in addition to general relativity, we know of some effects of fluid transfer in a binary, and there was a paper back in 1984 by Blinnikov et al. Who claimed that actually the probable outcome is that once you start mass transfer, you're going to have Rauch-Loeb overflow, and particularly in a black hole neutron star binary, where the accreting compact object is much more massive than the donor, you're going to get the standard evolution that you observe in accreting binaries, that is, the donor is going to move out, and by conservation of angular momentum. So, in fact, a schematic evolution in terms of the waveform would be that first the period decreases and then it increases, and the system unwinds, goes to a larger and larger separation. And unfortunately,
more tricky than that, the removal of angular momentum by the
Well, what you're absolutely right. Yes, it is tricky.
For example, if you have
this table is too long.
System, if you have a wide warp and a less massive normal star, they shrink.
Mm-hmm.
They exchange mass, there is Rauch-Loeb overflow, and they shrink. So it depends on the comparison of the time scale.
You're absolutely right, and this is the motivation for the study I'm going to present. But just to point out, one of the people in the et al. Is Novikov, who is a well-known relativist. So it's, you know, it's obvious that when they wrote the paper, they didn't have just Newtonian physics in mind. Okay, so this is a.
So they took into account gravitational.
Yes, but this was an analytical estimate. So the question is, what happens really in such a system when you have transfer of mass from one component to the other? And I think it can only be answered numerically, and this is why I'm going to report to you the results of some numerical simulation, and some of it is published, and I'm showing this transparency to point out two things. First of all, most of the work was done by William Lee, who's the first author on most of the papers. Second, the simulation is not general relativistic, it's mostly Newtonian or quasi-Newtonian. Okay, so you are free to disbelieve anything I say. That's the first approximation to the problem. Okay. Second,
in terms of gravitational radii, when these effects become important, how far apart are
they? Which effects?
I will
show it in detail. Actually, at about 3 solar radii, and the neutron star is, you know, how much that is in terms of the gravitational radius depends on the mass of the companion, so of the black hole.
I'm sorry, did you say 3 solar radii?
Solar, yes. Okay, so the neutron star, let's say, is 10 kilometers, 13 actually in our simulation, so when the two components move, when this binary separation is about 40 kilometers, then mass transfer starts. Okay, and I'm sorry? That's right, neutron star radius. Stellar. Okay, when I call the neutron star a star, even though it's a stellar remnant. Okay. Well, to be honest, I'm going to give you a few numerical details, and for the people who prefer to think about other problems in the meantime, the little homework problem for the duration of the seminar. So suppose you are given an accretion disk. Okay, this is the radius in terms of stellar radii. So all right, so let's say in terms of 13 kilometers, there is no more star here. And you are given the density distribution and the internal energy distribution as a function of distance from the black hole for various cases, and you are given the angular momentum distribution. So for example, for this case, you are very Keplerian up to about 80 kilometers, and then you go sub-Keplerian. And the problem is this, what outflows do you get from the system? Do you get winds? Yes.
It's related to the subject.
Well, in the sense that I know the answer, but here you have a real disk, and you know the angular momentum distribution, you know the density, I'm giving it to you, and you know the energy density, so it will be.
To the black hole and star.
Well,
how is it related? I understand this problem.
Well, the mass, the nature of the mass flow is one of the main questions that we ask, right? And the distribution of matter, whether, you know, it remains in the disk or whether it obscures the system entirely because of outflows. That's one possible outcome, right? That you have mass transfer from the neutron star into the black hole, but not everything is accreted. For example, you could shroud the whole system.
Or you form a disk.
Yes, for example. Okay. Should show you the units. Unless specified otherwise, so for example in the last plot, the density is in units of 10 to the 15 tons per cubic meter. The energy density is in units of 10 to the 35 ergs per cc, or 10 to the 34 joules per meter cube. And the time, when you see time on the plots, is in units of 1/10 of a millisecond essentially. Well, actually the problem is a little more complicated, the homework problem, because you don't have azimuthal symmetry. So I cheated, I only gave you the azimuthally averaged density distribution. These are the actual contours in the units just given. So the outer contour is 10 to minus 4 times the unit. I should give you a little bit of history of the subject. Of course, black hole neutron star coalescence was first considered by the Pope of relativistic astrophysics, John Wheeler, and actually he did publish it in the proceedings of the Papal Academy of Sciences. Mm-hmm. And his, I have not read this paper, but it has been described elsewhere, and I understand that he claimed that the outcome would be that the neutron star would be tidally disrupted, would go through the horizon and disappear there for the most part. Latimer and Schramm were interested in the R process. They wanted to identify a site for the R process. And they thought about the problem again. And they agreed with the main conclusion, but they thought that some mass would be ejected, sufficient actually to account for the R process nuclei. And as an interesting historical aside, by that time, of course, gamma ray bursts were known. So they asked the question whether these systems could be a source of gamma ray bursts back in 76. And they theoretically estimated the rate of binary coalescence of neutron star black hole. The answer agrees roughly with what we believed until the coffee break, so say through last year. And this was before the Hals-Taylor pulsar was discovered, so that's quite an interesting thing. And their conclusion was that because the rate is about 1 per 100,000 years per galaxy, then you cannot explain gamma ray bursts, which occur much more frequently than that 1 per week, say, was seen at the time, which shows you the strength of prejudice, because back in those times, obviously, everyone thought that gamma ray bursts are galactic sources. Now that we know that they're extragalactic, actually the rate is quite good. Okay, so this is a...
How could it be that they're galactic in such a... They're only using part of the energy.
Because everyone said they are galactic, yeah. So they didn't ask the question. Okay, so this is one possibility, that you have tidal disruption, essentially the star will be swallowed. The other possibility I already mentioned, Plinnikov, Novikov and others, Rossov overflow, where the binary component actually moves out.
Remind us of the end point of that, when the neutron star gets down to the temperature of solar mass, something explodes up.
That's right, that's actually...
And yeah. then what happens with that matter? Does it come to dwarf infinity, or does it all...
Well, this is, I think, the computation of the explosion have never been done in a binary system, so we don't know, really. But there will be very little mass left by that time, about 1/10 of a solar mass.
Yeah, and here it's an R process.
Right. Yes. So I think, according to some recent papers, actually, before you get an explosion, you get a phase of expansion which lasts several seconds. And obviously, in that case, the presence of a black hole in that system will affect the outcome. But yes, you're right. Some can be ejected. I don't know how much.
We're probably assuming that the neutron star is a polytrop for thermal
capture,
right?
Well, I don't know what the problem is.
But
we'll see.
That's an intention, Wilson. Because what, I mean, if I remove mass from the neutron star, whether it's very good to consider it in the neutron star, I mean, most equations would say have very steep dependence on mass versus radius, so I remove a lot of mass and the radius doesn't care much. So if I expand it.
I bet they assume it is not degenerates and degenerates are always expanded.
We don't know how the neutron stars work.
But yes, actually, you are addressing the main point. That the outcome of the process we find depends on what you assume about the mass radius relationship. That's the bottom line.
Oh, this was about this paper, probably.
Right, yes.
They get expansion, mm-hmm. They assume simply
yes.
The division is described by a polytrop.
I'm not sure this particular clinical paper, that if that's the same one in that period where they were worried about what happens when the neutron star goes because of this.
Right, precisely. That was, yeah.
Below the minimum mass.
That's right. This is, as pointed out by Doug, this is exactly the end point of the evolution. And they put it in the paper that at the end it will explode. Right, well, so these interest in the system. Systems, of course, was revived, in the gamma ray burst context, and I believe Bogdan Paczyński was the first back in 1991 to point out that if you believe that gamma ray bursts arise in coalescence, binary coalescence, then probably you have a problem for a double neutron star system in that the time scale for coalescence is too short. The coalescence occurs on dynamical time scale, So after a couple of milliseconds, you don't have much, you don't have an interesting system anymore. And some bursts obviously are longer, they may last even several minutes and have a lot of time structure in them. So presumably the system lives for a longer time. And of course, Nassaras and Rees mentioned this too, and they pointed out that the main problem in the gamma ray burst blast wave model is how to avoid baryon loading. So you don't want too many baryons to steal the energy of the explosion. Okay. So one of the main concerns then, if you think about gamma ray bursts, in doing calculations of the coalescence is whether or not you have baryons all over the place, or whether there is some direction, or presumably two directions, in which there are no baryons at all. And actually this motivated our study, and this is one of the reasons why we chose smooth particle hydrodynamics to do the problem rather than an Eulerian grid, because in an Eulerian grid for numerical reasons you have to put in more mass than you want to find from the start. So you cannot answer this question simply how much mass there is above or below the black hole. Okay, well, just to illustrate how short the coalescence is, this is our test simulation of two neutron stars, completely Newtonian. This is the point of dynamical instability at t equal to zero. This is one binary period later, which is 2.5 milliseconds later. And in less than two binary periods, so about 5 milliseconds, the merger is complete. You have a core which presumably will collapse to a black hole eventually and some spiral structure.
How much mass is in that spiral structure?
Let's see. For that I'll have to look up the paper, because my main interest is in the black hole. Neutron star, but I know the answer. That's about 20% of the initial mass. Yes. All right. So. And these are two neutron stars. Right. You see them. All right, so let me make a few comments. Well, the basic interaction here is really gravity between each of those particles here. Okay, and the outcome, since it depends a little bit on how the star responds to mass loss. So most of the hydro relay for this simulation is here. Okay, so that's one comment. The other comment is that if you want to believe any of this is true, you have to check that you can evolve a system of two stars next to each other without mass transfer. Okay, so for this reason you would like to solve a unique problem, which may not be physical, that the two neutron stars are tidally locked. In fact, estimates of viscosity suggest that in a real coalescence they will not be tidally locked. But just to check the numerics in this problem, they are tidally locked. Okay. Another comment is that as we were developing our code, Razi and Shapiro actually published the same result. So we have two independent codes and you can check the results against each other. They had 40,000 particles per star. In this picture you see 2,000 particles per star. And except for the resolution of the halo, which obviously is not very high in our simulation, everything else is the same. That's right, yes. Okay. And that brings us to the final comment, that obviously this is a very difficult problem in general relativity, and I understand that there are two groups who got to this point, that is, who constructed two neutron stars orbiting each other, but not even in full general relativity, but in the so-called Wilson approximation, at least it's so-called in France, where the metric is conformally flat. Okay, so you do not have a full GR solution yet of two stars orbiting each other, numerical solution. So for this reason, obviously, this process you can only see in Newtonian simulations at present.
Okay.
This, yes, right. room.
It looked like this when you said, when you brought this thing that you have this remnant disk and you have the neutral cell, the black hole.
Yeah.
In principle, you get something similar here too.
Are you calling this the disk, or?
Well, I'm wondering, yeah.
Well, it's not
that. Is this matter going to stay there for a while, or?
No, some of it is expelled, some of it will accrete, but it's difficult to really follow it because you have to run your simulation for a long time, and that's A, expensive, B, the numerical errors add up. But, so you can estimate that.
Is there a fundamental difference?
Oh yes, the fundamental difference is in the rotational symmetry by 180 degrees. When there is a black hole, you don't have the symmetry, so you never see a spiral pattern like this. All right, so let me tell you how this non-physical but important step is done, how to construct numerically two stars in the Newtonian approximation which orbit each other. The way it is done, you take two cubical stars and place them next to each other and put in gravity and all the other equations of motion and a very strong damping term. So any motion is critically damped so the things don't rattle around. And of course, as you run the dynamical, but as you run the simulation, the stars try to move towards each other, away from each other, and you are forcing it each step or every second step to stay, you're forcing them to stay at the same separation. So eventually they have no other option but to settle into a figure of equilibrium.
Okay.
And you can check whether you did that correctly by comparing with analytical computations. So for example, here is a plot of the angular momentum of the binary type as a function of radius, again in units of 13 kilometers. This is actually for the black hole neutron star binary, but the principle is the same for both. This is a point mass formula, so just Keplerian orbits of two point masses. This is the dashed line is an analytic computation of figures of equilibrium in that case, assuming that there are triaxial ellipsoids. Okay, and the crosses are our numerical computations. So at large radii, obviously the crosses agree with the triaxial ellipsoid approximation. But as the components move together, well, as I'm sure you saw on the graph, if you look carefully, the stars develop a cusp here, so triaxial ellipsoid is no longer a good approximation, and you depart from there. Okay? So there is a minimum angular momentum in a tidally locked system. It occurs here. Okay? And a secular instability sets in, and at this point you begin mass transfer and the dynamical instability sets in. So the...
Can you say, tell us what J over M squared is in invariant units, or to compare to a curved black hole? The key point is less than 1 or greater than 1.
This is for the binary system.
Yes.
Right, yes. Okay, well, sorry, I should have... Yes, I should have done that, I guess. So, right, yes, okay, yes. Okay, sorry. But I will show a plot actually of how much angular momentum is accreted by the black hole in terms of that parameter. All right, so here you have a simulation where you start the evolution of the binary separation as a function of time. Again, in units of roughly 10 to minus 4 seconds for the various initial separations. So here you don't expect anything to happen. There is even not the secular instability. And obviously, this is not an ideal straight line, but close to it. So there is some numerical noise present. Okay? This is the point of secular instability. Again, there is a little bit of noise. And this is the point of dynamical instability. And clearly, the systems converge. And the two curves here differ by... in the resolution of the simulation. So this is for 8,000 particles, this is for 17,000 particles, and the difference in separation is about 2% when you double the number of the particles. Okay, in terms of gravitational radiation, well, once you have the mass distribution as a function of time, you can compute the quadrupole moment. And for a point binary, this is the curve you would get. The black curve is the same displaced by a bit in time, simply because we start our simulation at the point of dynamical instability, and for a black hole neutron star system, the components are closer than for a double neutron star system when that happens.
Sorry, what's the mass ratio here?
Oh, this plot is Q equal to 1, so equal masses, just so that you can compare the neutron star, neutron star case to black hole neutron star without changing the mass. Okay. So the effect there is simply by replacing one component with a vacuum sphere of the same mass. Okay? So this is the
black hole is just a vacuum.
That's right. I should have said that, yes. So we simulate the black hole by a Newtonian point mass. Okay, or quasi Newtonian, depending on the equations we use. It's a vacuum cleaner, a spherical vacuum cleaner. So the Schwarzschild radius, we absorb any particle that comes in and put its mass at the center and impart the linear momentum to the black hole too. Okay, so the black hole grows during the simulation. And its only effect outside the horizon is gravity. Okay. So this is the...
No, that means you're changing the quadrupole suddenly. Doesn't that just create gravitational?
This is for individual particles.
Yeah.
Which have very small mass. And actually,
there's a lot of noise in telephone.
No. Not tall mass at the same time. You're right that this is not exact. But if you have, you know, you have about, in our simulations, you have about 14,000 particles which go in over an extended period of time.
Okay. Well, let me how did you compute the gravity equation?
Right, from the quadrupole formula.
From the
Yes, right. So, well, you see the jiggling here. Presumably this is the effect you are talking about.
Yeah.
That. As some matter goes in, you know, you have a rapid change. Okay. All right, so this is the double neutron star case, and this is the black hole neutron star case. And there's something here at the end, as you can see. So after the simulation seems to be over, there is still some emission radiation. Okay, just to show you pictures. With a low resolution. This is exactly the same picture as I have shown for the two polytropes, except that I didn't say that we simulate a neutron star by a polytrope. This is for a stiff polytrope, and we replace one of the polytropes by a heavy vacuum sphere, as I said. And this is, as you can see, there is no more symmetry, and the outcome is quite different. Yes. At the end, yes, I'll come back to that, of course. Well, for this simulation, yes, it is real. So if you assume that the accreting component can be modeled by a stiff polytrope, I don't know if that's good for a neutron star, because the mass radius relationship is not quite right, but who knows? Yes, this is still Q equal to 1. Just to compare the neutron star case with the black hole case. Okay, so this is the black hole mass as a function of time, this time in units of binary periods, 2.5 milliseconds. Okay, so obviously there is a large mass transfer over a few periods and then a slow mass transfer. These are the gravitational waveforms, again, quadrupole formula. This is the neutron star case. After the merger, obviously, the core slows down and the emission goes to zero. This is the black hole case. So first, the coalescence itself is a little more ponderous, as you can see, slower. Okay, then things happen very quickly, and then there is something left at the end. And just by looking here, you can guess what the final configuration is. Right, so obviously you have something periodic at the end. So for a stiff polytrope, the outcome is this. Okay. Showing the position of the smooth particle hydrogen particle. So there is a core. left over. These are four time frames. From here to here is one original period, and the core just goes around, doesn't lose much mass. So for a stiff polytrope, the outcome of the simulations is, and it's really not sensitive to any other assumptions that we've made, apart possibly from non-post-Newtonian effects of gravity. But the outcome is that there is mass transfer, very rapid mass transfer, and the core of the star survives and moves out. Less so than for the neutron star case. But yes, there is a disk, and I'm going to show it for a higher resolution run. Okay, well, I showed this representation purpose to remind you that what we are doing is a Lagrangian hydrodynamics in smooth particle hydro. So what we do is not, we don't have a fixed grid on which we solve the equations, but we follow particles of matter going around. Yes, these are the individual SPH particles. Okay, so let me compare the advantages of that for our purposes. First, Eulerian codes are very expensive because the computational time goes like the n to the power of dimensions. So if you want to add a third dimension, essentially you increase the time by the number of particles. Okay, for a Lagrangian code, the computational time is proportional to the number of dimensions. So it really makes no difference whether you make your simulation in 2D or 3D. Okay. Well, for those who do not know about SPH, what you actually do...
Yes? Are you not including gravitational radiation in the dynamics of
the simulation? The plots I showed so far have not included gravitational radiation. I will show plots in which we do have radiation reaction, and the outcome is qualitatively the same. Otherwise, I wouldn't be showing those. So the statement is that the outcome in all our simulation that we've done so far really depends only on the equation of state. It does not depend on, you know, the precise form of... Yes. Well, okay. What I showed so far is Q equal to 1. Where the dynamical time scale is shorter than the characteristic emission time scale, so there is very little difference. And then I will show a plot of a larger mass black hole in which you would think that there should be an effect. And I will show you that, in fact, simulations show that there isn't much effect. Well, let's say to a certain extent, Plinnikov et al. Were right, but to a certain extent. Okay, so what we actually do in SPH, we have massive points, but the mass is spread around. Well, we didn't invent the method, obviously, this standard thing. So there is a kernel. If you plot the density as a function of radius for each particle, there is a kernel which describes it. Okay, and the mass at any position is not only the mass of this particular particle, but also of, you have to include the masses of all the other particles whose kernel overlaps with this one, okay, in proportion to their distance. So this is the exact formula. You sum over all the masses multiplied by the kernel. Okay, so particles that are far away obviously do not contribute because this kernel is compact. It's zero at large distances. Okay, and once you have density and you have the equation of state, you can compute the pressure and hydrodynamic forces, etc. Okay, so when you use this prescription for density, then you can translate the plot of positions of particles into actual contours of density. This is still Q equal to 1. This is a high resolution run, 17,000 particles. The bold contours change by a factor of 10 in density. These are two times in the simulation. This is a view in the orbital plane, and this is in the perpendicular plane, and that answers your question about the distribution of matter. So there is the core, and then for Q equal to 1, there is a toroidal structure which lives for a very short time, but even though it's present there, to the limits of our resolution, there is no mass below or above the black hole. And the limit of our resolution is about 10 to minus 5 depends on the simulation, sometimes less, sometimes more. So it looks like, from that point of view at least, the black hole neutron star merger is promising for gamma ray burst model, at least for the shorter bursts, on two accounts. First, the axis is clean. Second, the process is extended by a factor of, I would say, almost a factor of 100 over the dynamical time scale. So instead of everything being over in two rotational periods, the thing rattles on for maybe half a second or so. Yes. Excellent timing, that's my next transparency.
Okay. Before you answer that, then the other question, that I just can't read, is how many periods are we at that?
Right, okay, so this is picked so that you have an interesting density contour. Okay, this is 55 and 60 dynamical times. The period, I think, is about 20 of those. So this is about 3 initial orbital periods into the simulation from the start of the mass transfer.
Okay, so it's 3 periods in a how much longer will the system in some sense last?
Right, so what happens then is that accretion shuts off, and you have this, in Newtonian physics it would be a stable binary. The core, the surviving core, has been removed to a larger separation. And then you have to wait for gravitational radiation to bring the systems again into contact.
Yes.
Okay, and then obviously the mass ratio will be different. And then this roughly happens again.
So this sort of cycle through.
Right, yes. So the statement is that you have many episodes of accretion and you exhaust this star or this system in a good fraction of a second. So it's not milliseconds, but you know, it can go. One cycle maybe lasts 10 milliseconds or so, or 20 milliseconds, and you have several of those. So
20
before accretion turns off, right? Okay, I showed the plot of the mass of the black hole for a single episode of accretion for this mass ratio of q equal to 1, right?
So this is in periods.
From here to here is 10 periods, about 20 milliseconds, and then you have many such episodes.
Right, okay. But you'd still be hard-pressed to explain the long period.
Oh, absolutely right. We cannot get 100 seconds.
Yeah. But it's conceivable you might get the short period, 1 to 1 second.
Right, for this stiff polytrope. Okay, for a soft polytrope, things will change a bit, and we'll re-examine the question again. Yes.
There was another diagram with the amplitude, the additional.
It's right here, the amplitudes or the luminosity?
Sorry.
Luminosity, yes.
You know, this is why the neutron stars seem to have
higher? Yes, because things go faster for a neutron star, essentially. Okay, for the black hole, things are more extended in time. That's one of the reasons. The other is that the period is shorter, and the luminosity goes like a high power. Sorry, this is Q equal to 1. I take that back. Right. So things simply proceed at a different pace. And also, I think the difference is that here all of the mass moved to the center. So all of it was very close together and was in very rapid rotation by conservation of angular momentum. Here the core survives, so it never comes close to the black hole or the center.
So my theory is given by
we haven't gotten to the disk yet. These simulations for the stiff polytrope do not really have a disk. So I know I showed some contours, but this is a transient phenomenon. Okay, this really, it's present only for mass ratio close to unity. when it's not close to unity, you don't even get this structure. But even in this case, the structure is very short-lived. Most of the mass gets accreted by the black hole very quickly. Mm-hmm. All right, so the actual equations, as viscosity, you may think, plays a role. So the hydroforce, so apart from gravity, is the standard gradient of density, which in smooth particle hydro is given by this. And then to avoid essentially interpenetration of particles, but also to simulate possibly physical viscosity, you put in a tensor here. And this is the form of the tensor. There is a term, C is the sound speed, alpha and beta are coefficients. There is a term which is essentially linear in velocity. This is this multiplied by mu. Mu has a velocity in it. And a term which is square in velocity. And the actual form that is used here is that if you have convergent flow, then you have this viscosity. If you have divergent flow, if the velocity of two particles goes in the opposite direction to the radius, then you don't put in any viscosity. So this is the actual prescription. And it has been shown by others that actually with this prescription, at least the linear part simulates the standard alpha viscosity. And based on our analysis of that approach, we conclude that in our case, we have essentially an alpha disk with alpha close to unity, put in numerically. So this is the viscosity, really, physical viscosity that we use.
Yes. Still slightly confused by
mm-hmm.
the form of the
yes.
What again is mu?
Mu is given here. It's essentially a measure of the convergence of flow. So you take two particles, their relative velocity is v, their relative separation is r. And if v is opposite to r, then this term reaches its maximum. Okay, goes to zero when they're perpendicular and when they move away. Right.
Well, this term is sort of like a von Neumann
viscosity
in
a world special hydrogen. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So,
and then what's the first term? Von viscosity?
Well, we have to look at the details, but it's
right.
Like a von Neumann viscosity.
Yeah, okay.
But then what's the first
this
the first term?
This or this?
No, the alpha CIJ.
Well, the... Okay, there is a mu here. Sorry, I pulled it out of the bracket. So this is with,
yeah.
So this is the term we are discussing. And then there is an additional term which goes like square of this mu.
And that's like just a Newtonian viscosity.
Well, not, yeah, almost, but not quite. Because you still have this problem that if you have two particles moving in away from each other, really there is. So in a sense, you could say this simulates bulk viscosity better than shear viscosity.
But then understand the asymmetry between approaching and receiving, whereas bulk viscosity doesn't make that distinction, I think. You know, positive or negative
yeah.
divergence.
Yes, yes,
approach.
I'm sorry, I misspoke, yes. Yes, way. I misspoke, I'm sorry, yes, I misspoke.
So, but you have an asymmetry.
Yes, we do have an asymmetry, right.
Mm-hmm. There's a negative divergence. Philosophy.
That is correct.
But
yes.
You don't create entity with a positive divergence.
That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you construct a motion between that or?
No.
Okay.
And let me make one statement here, which. Okay. So obviously you generate entropy in this way. Okay. Now the question is, what do you do with the entropy? And there are two extremes. You should really do radiative transfer of neutrinos to get the right answer, but we didn't. So there are two extremes you can consider. You keep all the entropy or heat that was generated in the flow, or you can get rid of it. Assume that, for example, it's radiated away by neutrinos with, you know, and that the optical depth is less than unity. Okay, so in one case, we generate the entropy and keep it. In the other case, we generate it, but it really goes away. And the qualitative results do not change. So the height of the disk obviously changes because it would be cooler when you remove the entropy. But nothing else changes in the simulation. Well, no, it's not built in. No, we have, this is a pseudo-Newtonian calculation, so in all cases, you know, we don't worry about relativistic effects. So we either do strictly Newtonian gravity or we do, you know, Paczynski Vita gravity, and we either include or we do not include gravitational radiation and some quadruple approximation. Okay, but...
Yeah, I mean, Newtonian, I mean...
Right, yes. Right, right. No, I understand, you're right. So the gravitational influence of particles does not depend on their separation. So this part is wrong, obviously. All right, so here is a more realistic mass ratio. Here equal to 0.31, so the black hole is about 4.2 solar masses. And what you see is really, you cannot resolve in this plot, you cannot see in this plot the mass moving in from the star to the black hole, but it does trickle. And what happens here is that that you get some sort of accretion episodes. You can see that the star sort of drops fluid blobs here and here to a lesser extent, and you have the star moving around the black hole. So this is without gravitational radiation reaction. This is the same plot, let's see, essentially the same plot when gravitational radiation reaction is included in the calculation.
How do you include gravitational radiation?
In a crude way, in a crude way, very crude way at this point. So, so yes, right, so with a quadruple formula.
The Argandson formula, but you do it on a particle by particle.
No, we don't actually. That's why I say it's crude. We really so.
You create a body force.
Right. We create a body force based on the position of the center of mass in the black hole, and we apply the same force in proportion to all the particles. So obviously, when this body is very distorted, the formula gives you wrong results. Okay. When it's close to a sphere, it should be okay.
I must say, what I thought you were going to say is use that old. You don't do that. You just
take
energy out of
the orbit. Right. Well, we do apply a force, so you know, but the force is derived, yes, from the energy losses in the orbit. That's correct. Yes.
But you could do what Jung just described, could you, in a flat space, because that, although incorrect,
it's still more than
right. Yeah, more than anything. Yeah, I mean, insufficient. But it's an energy conserving formalism in a flat space. Yeah. I believe that is a true statement.
Yes, the answer is yes, we could do it. And I think actually Razian Shapiro is more advanced than we are in including it in his code, although I haven't seen any results done with the inclusion of it. And we are putting it in the code. And strictly speaking, William is, who is in Mexico now as we speak. But this, what I'm showing you here does not do that. Point by point. Okay, another thing I should have told you, and I didn't, is that actually our code, to make it more efficient for the particular problem you're interested in, the matter distribution, let me go back to this picture. Okay, the way we compute gravity is with a three-level routine, doesn't matter how it is, I guess. So we do not actually compute the gravity between any pair of particles. That would be very expensive, it goes like n squared. Instead, we form a three-level structure, so when there is a cluster of particles close by, we aggregate them and compute the interaction of that aggregate with other aggregates. And in that way, the cost goes like n log n. So essentially, if we double the number of particles, the time doubles instead of quadrupling.
Do you just keep the monopole interaction, or do you also work with a kind of
between the
particles? Initially, I'm sure we did monopole. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I'm not sure what we are doing in the final simulation, but. But as I said, we have made many runs, changing many things, and the only thing that the result seems to depend on is the equation of state.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The proof is
on the subject. Right, yes.
But
the ones, with the exception of, you're talking about the potential, yes,
yeah,
that's right. The ones I'm showing here all have a Newtonian potential for the black hole. But we have done a Patrinsky-Vita potential for the soft polytrope. And again, the results are the same, except that they're even more attractive from the point of view of gamma ray bursts because the matter moves further away from the black hole, the final distribution of matter. But all the qualitative features of the simulation are the same. Well, because matter goes in earlier. It's not supported, right, yes. All right, so that was the stiff polytrope. Oh yeah, so now I should show you the comparison between the runs with the gravitational radiation reaction included and not included. All right, so this is a point mass binary expected. This is the simulation, Newtonian simulation with no radiation reaction, where we had a brief, this is mass or dm dt of the black hole. We had a brief episode of mass transfer as a function of time, and that was it, and then we had a stable binary. And because there was no radiation reaction, it was stable, nothing more happened in our code. Okay? When we put the radiation reaction in, okay, the binary moves closer in together initially, but then it kicks further out into an elliptic orbit, actually. And then this is a separation as a function of time. And in this elliptic orbit, it lives on and continues accretion essentially every time it comes here. So you see the peaks of accretion here. There's a first peak. Next peak. So the accretion is intermittent, okay, and this system rattles on for a long time. And the envelope of this is close to the simulation without the radiation reaction.
Seconds?
No, this is all in 10 to minus 4 seconds. So this is 0.2 seconds here. Sorry, 0.02. Okay, and you know, by looking at the mass that the star has and the rate of the accretion, you can extrapolate this and say how long this will take. And again, it's a good fraction of a second, but no more than a second. So in about a second, everything should be over here.
Why is it episodic?
Oh, because the orbit is elliptic. This is the separation as a function of time. It was kicked into an elliptic orbit. But even if the orbit were circular, then you would still get this because gravitational radiation reaction brings the components in together, then you get an episode of mass transfer which separates them. So they go like this.
It's not going to be wired yet, in the circular case.
Why should it be impulsive, this creation of elasticity? I mean, you go from a circular orbit to an elliptical orbit.
But I'm suggesting that even if the orbit were circular at the end, you would still get episodic accretion, because what we find is that for the stiff polytrope is that you move away far enough to break contact, accretion contact, no matter what. You switch it off. You accrete, and then this separation increases. The neutron star moves away and stops accreting. And then you wait for the gravitational radiation reaction to bring it back together, so you have another episode of accretion, and then it moves out again.
But the question is whether you can... I can imagine the situation that you have balance.
That's what I started out with, Blinnikov et al. That's what they say. You have steady state Rochlov overflow, in which case you simply have an increase of separation. But this is not what we find numerically. Okay.
So you're saying even when you calculate a circular evolution, you find episodic.
Right, so without the radiation reaction, we had a the final orbit that I showed was the core survived, did not accrete anymore, was separated for the black hole sufficient, and it was in a circular orbit. So you presume that if you turn on radiation reaction, the separation will decrease, and then you will get another episode of mass transfer, and the same thing will happen.
Mass transfer separated, though.
Can you explain why you get an eccentricity?
Well, it's, I think it's just like in any other case, like a supernova explodes, pure Newtonian mechanics, that, you know, you removed some of the mass. You gave a kick, essentially. Essentially, you give a kick, yes.
If this had been an evolution coming in from infinity, we probably would not have a
lot. No, we have made runs in which we have, this was for tidally locked binaries, we have made runs in which we took a spherical star, non-rotating, put in gravitational radiation reaction and let the binary evolve until the star came in closer. And the outcome of that was actually that the orbit was even more elliptic than in this case.
But it's not gravitational radiation reaction, it's not an accretion system. Creating that
eccentricity. What's creating the key?
Well, yes, I can. Yes, I cannot answer that question for certain because the ellipticity is present when we have radiation reaction, and we have not sat down and analytically tried to separate the two effects. So I'm sorry. My feeling is that it's hydrodynamic, and that radiation reaction only serves to change the nature of the flow. But I'm not certain of that.
You know, time scale because of radiation reaction, that, you know, the tanks of the rate tanks of gravity just because, you know, they are, you know, because of that way it's removing angular momentum from the orbit, so you don't have to go to your, it's not the real elliptical orbit, it's just what you just described. That you lose angular momentum in time scale much better than the orbit at any orbit. That's where you get those.
Right, so, you know, for calculations of a binary, elliptic binary with gravitation radiation reaction, the ellipticity decreases, the orbit is circularized. So this is why I believe that I think this is hydrodynamic. And but yeah. Well, you can. This is the binary separation, so you can see it's 1/5, 20%.
Well, I think with the literature, you are losing angular momentum on the orbit, so you deform the orbit. Before closing the orbit, you lost so much angular momentum that you don't close the orbit.
Possibly. Well, I don't know, yes. Okay, we'll have to look into this. I have a feeling that it's, you know, torquing of Newtonian torquing of the star by matter, but I'm not certain of that. Okay, I've shown gravitation this. So let me quickly move to the second part, which is now we take a soft equation of state in which R goes like M to minus 1/3. So, you know, as for cold degenerate matter. So perhaps for a neutron star this is better. And
so just a second, yes. How do you implement the equation of state in such a code? What is it that is defining the equation of state? Is it the radius of what we call?
No, you put in by hand the equation of state, you compute the density, and once you have the equation of state and the density, you have the pressure.
And that applies also wherever the particles are?
For the initial conditions, I'm talking about the initial conditions. And then what, actually I have some transparency here where the details are given. And later we just do ideal gas evolution, so this is actually... Okay, so this is a summary. Maybe I should put the summary in here now. Okay, so, right, so initially the star is a polytropic equation of state. P is rho to power gamma, where gamma is either 3 or 5/3, and this gives you the mass radius relationship. But during the dynamical evolution, we switch to a perfect gas law. And obviously we generate entropy. So we heat the gas up. So this is what we do. the main conclusions, which as I said are robust in the sense that for everything we tried, for all the parameters that we have at our disposal, you know, radiation reaction or removal of entropy, whatever you like, tidally locked, non-tidally locked, you get essentially one of two results. For the stiff polytope, you have a binary that survives, as I told you, and for the soft polytope, which I'm going to show you right now, the neutron star is disrupted completely and you form a torus or a disk. And you get some ejected mass, and in all cases we tried, you always have a clean axis.
Okay,
so
your neutron star is
correlating? No. That's the ones I showed, it was, but we also have runs in which it is not correlating, and the results qualitatively are the same. So, no, the amount of mass transfer may be different, but qualitatively the results are the same.
How this depends on the mass ratio.
Yes, I'm going to show you. Well, yeah, I'm going to show you some figures now for that. Not very much. Except for Q equal to 1 for the stiff polytope, where you have this transient torus, but otherwise it's essentially independent of the mass ratio. So these are, let's see, four runs for the soft equation of state. And this is the point when we, in this run that I'm showing, we have turned off the gravitational radiation reaction, but we have other runs in which we have a better prescription where we keep it in. Okay, so. All right, so this is the size of the black hole relative to the star obviously gives you the mass ratio. So this mass ratio Q equal to 0.1, and this is, I think, 0.3. Okay, so this is a huge black hole. Okay, obviously you may have problems here, but this is sort of roughly okay. So these two runs are identical, except that here we have turned off the radiation reaction later at the point when the star is no longer even approximately spherical, just to see, you know, how much difference that makes. So this is mass ratio 0.3. And, okay, so, now let me show you the disk. Do I have a picture of the disk? I must have lost it. But, okay, well, I have some reprints here, so you can inspect the disk. Or maybe I still have the transparency later on. I must have lost it. Okay, so let me do a picture here. Actually, I showed it at the beginning. That's fine. This will be homework problem. This is the outcome. Okay. This is the no trace of the neutron star in the orbital plane. We have a disk-like structure, and I think I have lost the vertical one, so let me just show you. You are free to inspect it later. It looks more or less the same as the transient disk in the case of the stiff polytrope.
A little thicker maybe, but not a lot.
Yes, right, so you have a clean axis, and here is a plot of how much mass you have as a function of angle away from the z-axis. Okay, so one is the z-axis and you don't have any mass to the limits of our resolution. Okay, this is for some runs, this is 10 to minus 5. Okay, you have to go away several degrees actually to begin to see mass. So you have a cone of maybe 5-10 degrees into which you can channel the energy presumably. So if you believe this has something to do with gamma ray bursts, maybe they are collimated a bit. Well, okay. All right, so I have some more plots, but essentially I'm done. So this is a plot of various things as a function of time for various runs. And this is angular momentum, for example. Angular momentum of everything in the simulation, but we lose angular momentum to the black hole. So the difference between the initial state and the final is a measure of how much angular momentum the black hole actually accreted. And, yes. Well, and these are the various energies. And obviously everything converges to some final state where all the energies are comparable. So there is a... All right, so I think that's about all. So the main conclusion is that if you have a mass radius relationship with a positive exponent, if the radius increases with mass, then the core survives. If the radius of the initial star decreases with mass or increases with decreasing mass, then it's disrupted and you get this disk-like structure, toroidal structure. Which actually, yes, we computed the accretion timescale for that, and it's about less than 100 milliseconds for the final disk. And some of the matter can be ejected. Actually, the thick line here separates the matter with positive energy from the negative. So in the absence of some unusual flows, all the matter on the outside of this line should be ejected. And it's, a few percent of a solar mass can be ejected. All right, thank you.